You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Welcome to the Choose FI radio podcast. Today is the episode that we've been teasing for the last couple weeks, and we finally were able to pull it off. No small feat, because there are several countries and multiple states that are covered in this interaction. Today on the call, we have JL Collins, Mr. 1500, Alan and Katie Donegan from Pop-Up Business School, and Bryce and Christy, digital nomads, right over at millennialrevolution.com. Today, we are going to be talking about Chautauqua. And as you guys know, this is something that we have been incredibly excited about for the last several years. And it's something that we've been talking about a lot, specifically over the last couple of months. This episode, we're going to get a chance to really dive deep into where this thing started. Where did it come from? Get a little bit of the different participants on this call, what their experience has been over the last several years. It's really a behind the scenes look at something that is so treasured in our community. Very excited about this conversation. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing quite well, Jonathan. Yeah, this really is a treat. I mean, to have eight of us on this call, we're all going to be speakers at Chautauqua in Greece this October. And it should just be a really nice conversation to learn about the history of Chautauqua, where it's been, where it's going, how all these diverse people got involved in this amazing event. And what's cool is I actually called up an old article from Mr. Money Mustache from September of 2013. And I wanted to read a comment that actually I left on September 16th, 2013. And I said, "This sounds like such a remarkable trip. I only wish I had known about it during the initial planning. After reading this article, I feel, not to sound ridiculous, a genuine yearning for connections like this with like-minded people. And I wish I could have made it to Ecuador. Real human connections are so often missing from American society, and it's so sorely needed." Jonathan, that just stuck out to me, that I've been talking about that for the last year on Choose FI. That is what I saw from the Chautauqua, and that's where that first spark came from. So it's amazingly full circle to now be not only going to Chautauqua for the first time, but to be a speaker at the event. It's really amazing.
It's incredible. It absolutely is incredible. And I remember when that came to your attention, it was actually someone in our community that heard us talking about the value of having a place that you could meet and share these different ideas, sharing that comment that you left literally 5 years ago at this point. And to see where Chautauqua has come in the last several years is absolutely incredible. And like you said, to be a part of it. So anyways, without any further ado there, let's go ahead and hop right into this episode. And I'm super excited, Jim, that you're joining us on this call. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to join you guys. It's always a blast doing this with you.
And it's not just you representing Basingstoke in the UK. Alan and Katie Donegan, Bryce and Christy, welcome to the podcast.
Yay, we like to call it Amazingstoke. Woo-woo!
Perfect. And Carl, Mr. 1500, representing Denver, Colorado. Or is it Longmont?
Longmont.
Yeah, it's Longmont. I'm in Boulder County, but I wish I was in Amazingstoke, because that sounds pretty fantastic.
Yeah, it'd be great for us all to be in Amazingstoke for this.
Wow, you're really selling it. You're really selling it hard here, aren't you, Katie?
Yeah, we only have a 2-bed flat. That might be a challenge. Yeah.
We're all friends here.
Well, as exciting as Basingstoke actually is, and as much as I would love to come visit you there directly, today we're actually going to be talking about Greece, which is perfect because that's actually where the Chautauqua that we're doing this year is going to be featured. But you know what? I don't actually want to start by talking about this Chautauqua. What I was hoping to do, Jim, is go back to the early days, because starting something where there is nothing, some momentum is required. And I'm curious, what actually inspired you to even try to put something like this together?
It's a great question and a fun one to answer, Jonathan. I think the first thing I would say is I never dreamed in the early thinking about this, and even in the first one, that it would become what it has become, this incredible event, quite honestly. Back in 2011, my wife and I spent a summer in Ecuador, and we really liked Ecuador. And out of that liking of the country, I signed up for an e-newsletter about it. And at the same time, I'd been kind of looking around for a venue that I could go to and maybe be a speaker and hang out in some cool place and meet cool people. But I wasn't finding anything like that. One day in this e-newsletter about Ecuador, there was an ad from Above the Clouds Retreats. This woman by the name of Cheryl, who didn't have her name in the ad at the time, but she'd put it up, and she was talking about a retreat that she was putting together to discuss happiness. And so I reached out to her by email, and I said, you know, I do this financial blog, and having money and being financially secure is a useful thing to aid in the search of happiness. And if you ever want to add a financial aspect to what you're doing, you know, here's my blog, and I put a link and love to talk to you about it. She responded almost right away and said, gee, that'd be great, but this isn't working for us. Nobody's signing up for this retreat. And we started talking about that, and I said, you know, I think I know how to make this work. Anyway, I went down in 2012, and we hammered out the bones of what Chautauqua was going to be, and actually that same framework is pretty much what we do today. It just, we seem to get it right the first time around. And my goal was, I wanted to go to a cool place. I wanted to hang out with cool people and talk about fun and interesting things like happiness and investing and achieving financial independence. And so we pulled together the idea and refined it and launched the first one in 2013. And it was a brilliant success. I remember it sold out pretty quickly. And I was, of course, very happy about that. And then the immediate thought that popped into my mind is, what have I done? What if I hate these people? What if there are going to be 25 people attending this thing and I'm stuck with them for a week and I hate them? Of course, the 25 people who came were some of the coolest people I've ever met. We had a great time together, and we immediately made plans to do the second one the following year in 2014, and that one sold out a little more quickly. And of course, my immediate thought was, what if I hate this group of people? But the truth is, every group of people who have come to these, and I've done 9 so far, this year I'll do the 10th and 11th one, every group of people we've had attend these things, without exception, they've all been different people, different personalities, different experiences, different backgrounds, but just amazing groups of people. And that, by the way, when I ask folks who attend, what's the single coolest thing for you about having come to Chautauqua, that's what they point to, is the other people who attend, the community. As one person said, I found my tribe.
I think what's so fun about this conversation is that you have both speakers and attendees that are on this call. Carl, I know you went for the first time as an attendee. I'd love to hear your perspective, what it was like for you to be at your first one, and just kind of see how that mirrors to what Jim was just saying.
Yeah, so I was hoping you'd ask that because like so many of us in this community, I'm a bit of an introvert. So, and that was actually one of my biggest hesitations to signing up. I've since come out of my shell a little bit, but back then I was still kind of shy. So I'm like, I signed up, and then the next day I was thinking, oh, geez, what did I sign up for? I'm about to spend time with this whole group of people who I don't know, and it kind of terrified me a little bit. And then I got there. The amazing thing was the first night I was standing there chatting with people, and I had to take a step back because the thought I had was, oh, wow, I've known these people for like a day, and they all kind of feel like good friends now, and I'm at ease with just about all of them. There's people I've known my whole life. You know, you've got the family member who I don't feel quite comfortable with, but these people were friends almost from the get-go. And well, like Jim said, it was the tribe. I'd found the tribe, and it was amazing how quickly and how easily everyone hit it off.
You know, I'm asking these questions as someone that is genuinely curious because this is going to be my first year, but I know that in my own real life, there are people that I've known for 5 to 10 years that I've never actually made it past the meet and greet stage. You know, you see them once every 6 months, once every several weeks, but whatever, but you're still looking for common threads years and years in. And you describing what this was like for you gets me incredibly excited about the upcoming event. But I'm very curious. I was thinking, Jim, as you were saying this, I'd love to go back and hear when you were talking with Cheryl that first year, what was your idea for the structure? I mean, did you have any sort of template that you were working off of? I mean, basically you're going blind as to what would make for a great event. What was your initial thought about what you would try to put together?
Well, I think basically my thinking was, what would I want to do? What would be fun for me? And it occurred to me, because we're going to hold these things in hopefully interesting and maybe exotic places like Ecuador and, of course, Stratford-upon-Avon last year, and now at the foot of Mount Olympus in Greece. I thought we don't want to make this just a couple of days. So lengthwise, we thought a week would be a good amount of time. We thought, once we got people there, the core of it is they're going to want to come and meet the speakers, because presumably they've been listening to your podcast or to Christy's blog or Carl's blog or mine, and maybe they want to learn more or just meet us. So that was a part of it. So we're going to have each speaker give a talk and spend a couple of hours giving a talk and doing Q&A. And of course, the speakers are available all week. We wanted to keep it a very small, intimate group, so we target basically about 25 attendees, no more than 30, so everybody gets to know everybody, and especially all of the attendees get to interact with all of the speakers during the course of the week. Because we're going to a cool country, we thought, well, we ought to take them out and show them some of the country, so we do excursions. And then we came up with this idea of what we call one-on-one sessions, where each attendee can select one of the speakers for a private one-on-one meeting that lasts about an hour. Mine, we don't keep a time clock on it. Mine typically go a little longer. And then it's up to the attendee. They can explore anything they want with the speaker they've chosen. In my case, because I write about investments, most typically people want to talk about their investments and their strategy and how close to FI they are, or are they at FI and that kind of thing. But the topics, I've been amazed actually at how the topics have ranged. But these are all very confidential conversations, and it's just between the attendee and the speaker.
Jim, I'm curious about the one-on-ones. Do you get topics in advance? Like, do you speak with the people who select you as a one-on-one mentor beforehand, or are you just sitting down and saying, hey, let's talk about whatever? Like, how do you deal with something where you might not be able to answer it right there and then?
What I do personally, and I think what most of our speakers have done, is once we know that we have been selected to be for a one-on-one, the organizers, in this case, Katie and Alan, will send me a note, let me know, and we'll send the attendee a note saying, you know, choice for speaker. And we ask, by the way, attendees to choose a couple speakers in order of preference, and we try to accommodate them. But anyway, once the attendee knows who their speaker is and vice versa, I typically reach out, or they typically reach out to me, and we exchange an email. And I say, you know, anything you want to share with me in advance will help us hit the ground running a little bit easier, a little bit faster, so we can make the best use of the time. But that's up to the attendee. Now, some attendees have been very comprehensive in the advance information they provided, and for that matter, the information they bring to the meeting, and others not so much. And from my point of view, this is for their benefit. This is their time, and I'm comfortable accommodating them in whatever way works best for them. And then in terms of your second question, which is what about things that aren't answered, that you can't answer right at the moment, I'm actually not recalling a situation like that. But were it to come up off the top of my head, I suppose it would be a matter of saying, you know, let me look into that, and we can talk a little more. I will say one of the things that I say to all the people I have one-on-ones with is, this does not have to be the last time we talk. So if you reflect on the conversation we've had and the subjects we've covered, if new questions occur to you or new concerns, you know, we're friends. We've become friends. Reach out and email me, or we can Skype and follow up. And I have done that on a couple of occasions with people. And that's always fun, because one of the cool things about your talk was you meet new friends.
You know, one of the things that's always been so impressive to me about the Phi community is that there is no level up class. We're not trying to upgrade you into this secret camp where that's where you get the real information. And Jim, you've always been the pilot of this. You just give everything away for free. You blanket say that, yes, you can buy my book or you could just read my blog. I have put everything there. I'm not holding out on you. And I know for a fact you would be the first one to say that Chautauqua is not going to be the place where you're going to find out the secret ingredient of the Phi community, the stuff that we're not telling everybody else. The Phi community is welcoming and opening, but I think, and I'm asking, I guess, if you would agree that what you are getting is you're getting the intimacy, you're getting the time, you're getting the one-on-one experience where we can slow down and figure out what does it look like for your particular situation. And I think that is so valuable in the context of Tribe. Does that kind of mirror your own perspective on this?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And I think the comparison you draw with my blog and with my book is a good one. So when I was writing the book, some of the advice I got, and I went from several different directions, was be sure you put stuff in your book that's not on your blog so people have to buy your book. Boy, that just didn't sit well with me, because the reason I have a book to write is because of my readers of the blog. And that just, I just didn't work for me. And so there is, I tell people, there is nothing in my book that you can't find on the blog. The book is a little better organized because the blog kind of came together organically, whereas the book was more of a whole design. The book is more concise. There's a lot on the blog that either wasn't appropriate for the book or I didn't have room for. But the book is more concise in the presentation. I like to think the writing is a little more polished. I certainly spent more time polishing it. But yeah, as you say, if there's a secret sauce, it's already been talked about. And by the same token, if somebody's read my book or my blog, or I would Christie's blog or Carl's, I don't think they're going to hear something brand new from those people only for Chautauquan ears. But they get to, you know, we get to have that conversation up close and personal, and in the one-on-one sessions and even the conversations during the week. And there are a lot of those between attendees and speakers and attendees themselves and what have you. You know, they have a chance to ask questions that pertain to their specific situation and how these concepts apply. But yeah, there's no hidden magic secret sauce dust that you only get at Chautauqua. What you get is a great community experience.
I wanted to bring in Alan and Katie and ask them, since you guys are organizing this event and designing the schedule, I'm curious, what does a regular day at Chautauqua look like? So I actually had this conversation with my wife, Laura, yesterday. She said, hey, you know, what are you going to do 16 hours a day, 16 waking hours a day for 7 days? What does an average day look like? I understand there are excursions and there are speakers and these one-on-ones, but you know, that doesn't make up an entire week. When you sit down to organize this event, like, what does a regular day look like?
Well, for Greece, it will start with a beautiful breakfast looking out over the Aegean Sea, maybe with some baklava and some hummus. Not at the same time, that would be weird. And then we have some time for the one-on-ones. Then we have a speaker doing a 2-hour talk that then there's time for the Q&A afterwards. We deliberately leave a lot of time, free time in the schedule for the attendees to get to know each other, for the attendees to chat to the speakers that aren't in the one-to-ones. And if you look at the schedule, a lot of people think, oh, that looks very light. But we have done that deliberately to allow the time for the relationships to develop and for people to get to know each other.
So Alan, you and Katie went to your first one within the last several years, I believe, and quickly we're all in on this. What was it that, you know, took you from participant that someone that says, I want to build this into my annual calendar? It's that important to me.
When we first booked on to Chautauqua, November 16, we went to Ecuador and we had about 10 months to plan. And we didn't want to give Jim or any of the other speakers an easy ride with us. So we tracked our expenses for a year. We did a PowerPoint showing our exact financial position. And we turned up a little bit in a mess because we had a lot of cash saved up. First world problem, I know. But we didn't know how to invest it. The pound was collapsing. We didn't know whether Donald Trump would get in or not. We wondered what that would do to the market. And we just had an entire hour and a half on the first day with Jim to work out our exact financial future. And then he did indeed spend more time with us the second day and try and sell us some Florida land. And we had this incredible experience where we were able to get direct advice on how the FI principles apply to our life.
And what has that done for your financial peace over the last 12 to 24 months?
We were able to directly quiz Jim Collins, Pete, Mr. Money Mustache, and the Mad Scientist, and grill them on what we should do. We got similar advice from all three. We actually took the plunge. Immediately we got back from Chautauqua and invested all of our cash into the market. And we've had a fantastic ride since. It could not have been better. And we're probably 85% of the way to financially free. And that has helped massively, that advice, to get us on the path and to get us investing.
It's amazing to me how tied and glued you are to the FI community now, because you kind of came in a different lane. I mean, building this business, helping other people build businesses. I mean, you are smartly in the solo entrepreneur camp. And I imagine that your gateway to the FI community was this initial Chautauqua, right?
Yes.
And after that, I mean, you're becoming a fixture in this community. And to me, that's very gratifying, just because I'm so passionate about the work you're doing and you're kind of banding these two communities together. So Bryce and Chrissy, can I bring you into this conversation for a second?
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. It's a little cold, but totally worth it to be here with Alan and Katie in Amazing Stoke.
I think it's catching on. Is that trending on Twitter?
It should be.
We'll try to work on that. I know that you guys, for your first time, you came as speakers. I believe you flew like 4,000 some odd miles to go to your first Chautauqua.
Yeah. So we flew from Toronto to London to attend the Chautauqua. And I really had no idea what to expect. Like Jim was saying, okay, if you're in a room full of strangers and if you're spending a couple hours with them, okay, if you don't like those people and you don't have to spend time with them, that's fine. But spending an entire week with 25 people that you don't know and you don't really know what it's going to be like, it is a little scary in the beginning. But what happened is that once we started talking to the attendees, it was like we had known them our entire lives. It was very strange. And we immediately got to talking about everything under the sun and not just about finances. Like, we got to know about their family. We got to know about their fears. We got to know about what passions they have. And the time just flew by. By the third day, I think a lot of us had already lost our voice from talking so much, because we had so much, there was so much bonding between people at the Chautauquas.
I mean, the thing about with the people that are pursuing FI is that for a lot of us, we are weirdos and misfits in our own little communities. Our friends think we're crazy. Our families think we're crazy. Nobody understands what's going on. And when we start talking about the stuff that we're really passionate about, they start looking at us like we have two heads and this kind of stuff. Now you put all these people into one room. Now everyone actually immediately gets each other. And then the conversation just flows like crazy. People feel like they can finally be themselves. And that's most interesting pieces of feedback that people were getting as they were at Chautauqua, that they could finally feel like they could be themselves and they could be themselves around other people and not feel judged. And everyone just got along famously for just that reason. And that's why a lot of lasting friendships formed in there that are still in existence now. People are still chatting back and forth on Facebook. A lot of them like gathered here in the UK just this week, just as a mini reunion, just so that they could see everyone again, because, you know, these are their lifelong friends now, because they couldn't get those kinds of relationships in their normal, you know, situation back home. So that was what was really interesting, in that that week really actually formed lifelong friendships. And we were just honored to be part of it.
Bryce, to a person, every single one of you has described the magic of Chautauqua as being centered around the people who are there. And I'm curious if you have any insight into, aside from the fact that they're members of the FI community, do you think there's anything that maybe people self-select who are looking to go to a Chautauqua and fly thousands of miles and stay for a week? Does that differ from anyone else you've, and certainly not to put other people down in the FI community, but it right. seems like this is a special breed. I'm just curious if you have any insight.
There is a barrier of entry to this one, right? I mean, it's not just like go to my blog and this kind of stuff. And all I ask is that you just type in the name correctly into the URL. This one, you have to actually plan. You have to get babysitters for the kids if you have them. You have to buy the flights. You have to book time off of your workplace. Everyone that goes there wants to be there. And they go there because they want that community. Like, they're going there to seek that community. It's not like they're showing up and be like, all right, what's so great about this place? Everyone's going there because they want they want that sense of belonging, and they want that sense of that surrogate family that they have been looking for, right? And a lot of them also want other things, like, you know, they want to be reassured that what they're doing is correct. They want to know if it's okay for them to, is it okay for me to pull the trigger and leave? And the Chautauqua is one of the few places where everyone kind of understands that and actually has the expertise to help. Right.
I just want to add to Bryce's point. One of the things that makes Chautauqua magical is the one-on-ones. And as Jim talked about it earlier, the one-on-ones are basically sessions where the attendees can have with the speakers, and it can be any topic that they want to talk about. If they want to double check their finances, if they want to talk about their fears of retirement and what to do in retirement, any topic that they want to talk about, and it is under lock and key. It is absolutely confidential. And this creates this bubble of trust where people actually feel like they can just speak their mind and not be judged. And I think that is where the connection happens, and that is where the camaraderie happens. And it happens throughout the week, because even after the one-on-ones are done, the attendee has the opportunity to reflect on what was spoken about and then come back to the speaker or talk to other attendees about it if they so choose to. And then that really creates the magic of Chautauqua, because it's that connection that you've shared something with someone else and they've shared their information with you to the point where something that you wouldn't talk about with your normal friends and family. So people actually become so close-knit that Chautauquans form an actual family.
You know, Jim, I'd love to circle back and talk to you a little bit about, I guess, would you almost call it this phase two of Chautauqua? I don't know if that's exactly the right word, but I want to frame this picture of 2016. You meet Alan Donegan. He's coming there as an attendee, and Brad and I and everybody in this call know what an amazing person he is, what an amazing couple him and Katie are, the amazing things that he's doing with Pop-Up, but he's a relative unknown to the FI community. And you go all in on him and say, you know, I would love to partner with you and bring this to the UK. What was it about Alan in 2016 that inspired you to make that request?
I'm so glad you asked that, because I think this is kind of a cool story. As I mentioned earlier, Chautauqua attracts a really interesting group of people. And I've reflected, by the way, to dovetail on what Christy was just saying on how do we get so lucky? And I think there's a couple things, and then I'll get to the Alan story, but setting it up as to why somebody like Alan would show up, I suppose. One is that this is not necessarily an easy event to commit to. It is a full week of your life. For most people, there's a fair amount of travel. And so I think it attracts people with a certain sense of adventure and a certain willingness to put themselves out there, maybe. But the other thing, as Christy was pointing out so well, is you really get to know each other very well. And it has occurred to me, it's not so much maybe that these really cool people come to Chautauqua, but that there are a lot of really cool people out there in the world. And in Chautauqua, we just get to see the really cool side of them, because they become so comfortable so quickly and so willing to open up and share that. And that was certainly the case with Alan and Katie. We didn't know who Alan and Katie were. I had never heard of Pop-Up Business School. I don't think any of us had at the moment. But we got to know him, as we do almost everybody, very, very quickly, and what he was doing. It was just so cool and so entrepreneurial. We buttonholed Alan early on, and he probably remembers better than I do, but we asked him actually to give a little half-hour talk after dinner one night, because we just thought the rest of the group would really enjoy hearing about Pop-Up Business School and that mission. And in fact, they did. And Alan, for those of you who don't know him, is a brilliant public speaker. So he knocked it out of the park, not only with the message, but also with just his style of presentation. And I sat back and I was watching that, and I was just struck by, this is somebody special. But even then, I didn't make the connection, which is surprising to me, because in the back of my mind, as wonderful as the Ecuador Chautauquas were, I kind of had a yankering to do them in another part of the world. And I felt I needed somebody to do the logistics on the ground from that part of the world. But I didn't make that connection until later in the week. And of course, I had gotten to know Alan and Katie better and better as the week went on. And then on Friday, which is the last full day, And it's a fairly open day for people because by now everybody's friends and they're engaging and I'm engaging with people. And I notice Alan running around, you know, doing something, and I can't tell quite what he's doing, but there's obviously something going on. And but I'm not paying too much attention because I'm busy talking to whoever I'm talking to. Well, at dinner that night, Alan and Katie present us, the speakers at that Chautauqua, with this slideshow. And what they what he was doing is going around and he was getting a photograph of everybody who attended, and not just a photograph, but a photograph that really captured that person's personality. And he got from each attendee that photograph and a line or two of what they had to say, what their feelings were about each of the four speakers. And he presented this slideshow to the four speakers as a parting gift. And I said to him afterwards, Alan, when did you start working on this? I said, when did you come up with this idea? He said, oh, I was in bed last night and it occurred to me. I said, when did you start working on it? And he said, oh, this morning. And I said, wait a second, you pulled this incredible thing together from thinking about it last night and starting it this morning till now? And he said, yeah, and like it was no big deal. And I thought, you know, this is a guy who can get stuff done. I thought about that a little bit, and the next day was Saturday, and that's the day we say goodbyes, and people are getting on the bus to go to the airport. And as Alan was going to get on the bus, I grabbed him, and I said, Alan, I want to put a bug in your ear. Don't answer me now. I just want you to think about this. But what would you and Katie think about organizing a Chautauqua in the UK for the next year, which was 2017? And Alan looked at me. He said, Jim, we're going to do it. And he turned around. He got on the bus. And 10 months later, I was at Stratford-upon-Avon doing a first ever UK Chautauqua. And it's been a brilliant partnership ever since. So thank you, Alan and Katie.
Love you too, Jim.
Thank you, Alan.
Hey, Carl, I wanted to get you in for a minute here. I'm curious. So you've been to the other major events in the community, which are FinCon and Camp Phi, and you've also been to a Chautauqua and are obviously going as a speaker this year. I'm curious if you could compare how Chautauqua fits into that world and what you benefited from a full week long event as opposed to a shorter 3-day event like the other two.
Yeah. So there's a couple things that make this different. And by the way, Brad, all those are great events, but what makes Chautauqua different is for one, what you mentioned, you have a whole week with these people. So you have much more time to sit there and bond and to engage in conversation. You never know when the magic is going to strike. It might be in front of a fireplace at 2 a.m. or it might be in the middle of a presentation. The other thing that makes it special is the limited number of people. It's not like I think FinCon this year is going to have like 2,000 people. So Chautauqua is very limited in the amount of people. And after that gets filled up, there is no more. So you're going to get to know everyone really, really well. And what amazes me is sometimes you go to these conferences or you'll meet someone. You'll say, hey, let's meet up again. And then you never see that person again. Since I went to Chautauqua about a year and a half ago, I've met up with at least half the people. I'm meeting two more when I go to Portland next month, and I'm starting a business with another one. So it's not like these are temporary friends who you hang out with for that week. It's I feel I'm going to know some of these people for lifelong. The small, intimate nature of it is what really sets it apart from some of these other events.
You know, I love, Carl, that you highlighted that you're actually starting a business venture with one of them, because what came to mind earlier in this conversation, and I'm actually going to direct this at Bryce and Christy, when we interviewed you guys, I think last September, you were just coming off of the UK Chautauqua last year. And one of the first things you said to me, Bryce, in your usual exuberant manner, which I'm very used to at a personal level, was that what was so great about Chautauqua was that instead of fixating all the things that were going wrong in with life, you were talking about what you could build together, right?
Yeah. There was so much like this crazy creativity that was happening there that people wanted to, like people just wanted to go home and do stuff. And they wanted to keep the party going, keep the thing going. And they wanted to basically go home and figure out how to make the world a better place. And they wanted to figure out, like, it wasn't about them. The strange thing is there was this sense of community and this sense of kind of responsibility of trying to like educate and trying to bring as many people into this happy-go-lucky bubble that we've created as possible, because we wanted everyone to know what was possible. People wanted to start businesses. They wanted to create, like, there was this project to create like an FI board game, and I don't know, and they're still talking about how that's going to work. And it brings along a lot of cool, creative people that are on the verge of, many of them are on the verge of retiring. They're going to have a lot of time on their hands, and they want to know what they're going to do with the rest of their lives. And this really answered that question for them, because, you know, retirement for the first 6 months is fun. You watch a lot of TV and you eat a lot of bad food, and, you know, there's a lot of bad MTV that gets watched. But then after that, everyone that does this is a very kind of smart, creative, hardworking person. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been here in the first place. So then the big question for after the, you know, the day after FI is, what do I do afterwards? And then this actually answered that a lot, quite a bit, because it put together all these people that have all this boundless creative energy, as well as a varying degree of technical skills. There's a lot of engineers, a lot of computer people, but there's also a lot of like marketing people. There's a lot of artists. There's a lot of like all these different skill sets that would never have been able to meet in one place. And then they started connecting with each other, and they started, you know, let's meet up and do this or that, that thing afterwards. The Carl thing was actually a great example of that. People become lifelong friends, and sometimes they go off and create brilliant things. I'm always excited to see what's going to come out of every one of these things, because you really can't predict what's going to come out of it.
So to give you an example of the exceptional people that come to Chautauqua and what they actually produce afterwards, one of our youngest attendees, she's a 17-year-old. She came and she benefited from Alan's training about starting a side business. And we just found out from her recently on the Facebook group that she started making her own customized dolls. And she actually told us that she made a doll of myself, Alan, and the Mad Scientist. I just had to go buy the doll and actually get the customized t-shirts. I got a pop-up business school t-shirt. I got a Mad Scientist t-shirt, and I got a JL Colonista t-shirt that I can put on the dolls. And it's just been exceptional. She's started her own business just coming out of Chautauqua, and she's only 17 years old. So that is an example of the type of exceptional people and the energy that everyone gets out of Chautauqua.
Katie, I'm curious, as the organizer of the event, are there other instances where attendees have given presentations or that you leave space for that? So obviously, Alan gave this presentation that was extraordinarily well received and really made Alan and you, Katie, certainly involved in the Chautauqua event for years to come. Like, are there time slots where you give attendees the ability to give presentations?
Yeah, I like to tease Alan that he hijacked our Chautauqua, but it was a wonderful presentation that he did in the one in November 16 in Ecuador. But yeah, like I said before, we leave a lot of space in the agenda to allow things like that to happen. And we never know who's going to come along and what kind of cool stories they have. So yeah, we're very open to hearing from these people, that everyone benefits from that, the attendees, the speakers, and get to know each other even better.
You know, Brad, I actually want to kind of target this at you a little bit. And I think this is interesting because we spend so much time on this show talking about lifestyle design, talking about what are you doing on the journey and after the other side of FI. You know, as I think about you and the different business ventures that you've been involved in, every single one has, when it's had any level of success, has been a collaboration. I imagine that if you were to think through it, the glue is that you connect to a community and you find a like-minded person because of a community, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And yeah, that has really been the hallmark of my success in my three different websites and podcasts now. So yeah, I mean, for me, community is absolutely essential. And to hear you guys describe all these amazing serendipitous conversations where you can get a business venture like Carl has, and who knows where these conversations are going to go. To me, that's just so magical. And I know, like, I'm sitting here with a smile on my face listening to you guys talk about it, because I have not been to a Chautauqua. This is so exciting for me. You really just never know where one chance conversation will take you in life. To have 30 people at an event really just magnifies the possibilities. So yeah, I'm just so excited about that.
And doesn't it ultimately end up coming down to trust when you start talking about collaborative ventures? I mean, that is when we talk about the intimacy and having 7 days and breaking down barriers and focusing on what you build together. We know that in this digital age, it's very hard to actually have personal connections, real personal connections. And having a 7-day carve out is something that's rare and it's precious. And I think, Jim, that ultimately, would you agree, Jim, that ultimately that is what Chautauqua is offering? It's breaking down just the barriers of this digital age and allowing people to build relationships that are based on trust.
You know, it's interesting, Jonathan. I never thought of it in the terms you just put it in contrast to the digital age, but I think you're absolutely right. I think something like this, even before the digital age, would have had great value, but in the context of the age we live in, maybe even more so. And it's been remarkable for me, and I've had the privilege of, as I say, having done 9 of these so far, and 10 and 11 coming up. So I've seen a lot of these connections happen, and I've seen a lot of, not just businesses, but personal relationships develop. I think, the story of, I'm sure when Alan and Katie signed up to come to Chautauqua, they were expecting to have a great and interesting time and maybe learn a little bit about their investing. But I would imagine they never dreamed they'd wind up running the things. And when I went to that Chautauqua, in the back of my mind, I was kind of thinking, you know, it'd be fun to do this in another country. I never dreamed that this couple was going to arrive at this Chautauqua who were going to be the perfect fit to make that happen. And in my personal experience, there have been, you know, that's one example. Just last month, I gave a talk at Google. How did I happen to give a talk at Google? Well, last fall in Ecuador, one of the attendees works at Google and asked. Great opportunity for me, great fun to do, and she was delighted with it. The video that maybe some of your listeners have seen of me trying to channel John Goodman from The Gambler and what have you, I had wanted to do that since the moment I'd seen that bit in that movie. But it wasn't until I met Joan and Brian a couple of years ago at Chautauqua, who are filmmakers, who said, hell yeah, you know, that sounds like a lot of fun. We'll do that with you. You know, another great example and something that's really cool that's coming up. And in fact, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be on a plane going out to Portland, Oregon to film my part of an upcoming documentary on the Phi community and movement. Travis Shakespeare, who is the director of this documentary, I first met at Chautauqua. And I'm not sure if Chautauqua was his first introduction to the FI community, but it certainly immersed him in it and got him interested. Scott Rickens, who is the producer of this documentary, was at Chautauqua last fall in Ecuador. Scott already was working on the documentary when he came, and that's one of the reasons he came. But so there's a lot of synergies that have come together out of it, and those are just a couple that have touched me. But I've seen it touch countless people, and I keep hearing the stories, and I'm sure there are stories that happen that I never hear about, where two attendees connect and whatever they're doing is between them, and they go off and do it.
Alan, let's bring this back to you and Jim. Could you guys take just a couple minutes and talk about where you see this going from here?
So I've been thinking a lot about Chautauquas and the cool places we could do it, and I have this dream of doing it in a castle in the Alps, some kind of Bond villain lair in the snow, and we're all hiding inside with the fires. And then moving it the next year to an incredibly warm and sunny place. And I think there's a bright future of exceptional people getting together in exceptional places with exceptional food, because that's important to me.
Perfect.
And having great conversation. And it's a really bright future of hanging out with amazing people in special locations.
Alan, do you think that the 2 weeks per year is what you're targeting for the future as well? Is that pretty well set?
I think so. Like, we could either do 2 weeks as we do, or we might do 1 week in the winter, 1 week in the summer. I think it's all up for debate. We just want to go to cool places with cool people.
Well, I would agree with everything that Alan has said, and I would add that there is a tremendous amount of work that goes on behind the scenes to bring a Chautauqua together and to make it flow as seamlessly as it does. And I mention that because they're not easy to do. And I think Alan and Katie would agree with me if I said we look at this and it's like this delicious banquet meal, and we'd love to have more, but there's, in a sense, only so much you have bandwidth for and that you can absorb. I personally, in my most ambitious, I think maybe it'd be fun to do 2 back-to-back weeks in the spring and 2 in the fall, or 2 in the winter, 2 in the summer, whatever, and maybe a total of 4 during the year. But again, that depends on our bandwidth of doing it. As Alan said so well, I see us doing it in continuing series of really cool spots. When I first engaged Alan and Katie, I thought, well, okay, you know, now I got two people who can do it in the UK. Well, their organizational skills are so formidable that it turns out they can do it well beyond the UK. And as people know, as we're going to Greece this year, we will be going beyond the UK and then beyond Greece. And so it will always be some cool destination. It will probably always be two back-to-back weeks going forward, whether we expand beyond that or not. I think we would love to do more because they're just so much fun, but we're a little bit limited by bandwidth and other commitments in our lives. So I think we can be pretty confident we're going to do two back-to-back going forward each year. And we're always looking at the possibility of doing more, and we'll just have to see if and how it comes together.
So for those of you that are listening to this and are like, how did I not know about this? I want to get my ticket. You can go to chooseify.com/Greece. I think what becomes apparent pretty quickly is that there is some built-in scarcity. This is number 10 and 11 of Chautauqua, and there have only been, I guess, approximately 250 tickets up to this point. There's only 30 tickets available for each individual week. There's not going to be 31. There's not going to be 40. So yeah, there is some built-in scarcity. And for those of you that are thinking, yeah, well, I'm not going to be going this year, but I'm trying to decide whether or not this is something that I should be considering in the future. What I'd like to do as we wrap this up is get each of you just to take a second and give our audience maybe one actionable takeaway for what they should be thinking about as they try to figure out how to put this into their plans and where to place it in terms of value. And Carl, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, so the thing I think about is one complaint or one thing I hear when I talk about financial independence with people is people say, oh, I don't want to make the sacrifices. And I really don't like that, but it took me a long time to put my finger on why I don't like it. But the reason is, if you're living your life right, this isn't a sacrifice at all, because what it all came down to after lots of thinking on my part is the stuff that you think are sacrifices are distractions. The cars and the big house don't make you happy. And I've had it. I had a 5,000 square foot house. So back to what Brad said at the very beginning, the thing that makes us happy is the tribe. It's the people around us. And that's what you get at Chautauqua. There is no sacrifice with financial independence.
Bryce, Christy, final thoughts from you?
Okay, so the takeaway I would give is one of the things that people have asked me is, when you get to financial independence and afterwards, how do you deal with the haters and people just don't get this lifestyle and call you a weirdo and that makes you feel bad? What we've actually discovered is that right when we actually retired at the beginning, this was very true and people were very suspicious. But ever since we retired, and it's almost been 3 years now, just living our lives the way that we want to live and being happy and also being happy for other people, people have realized that we don't actually want anything from them. So it's really turned out to be the longer you stay retired, the more confident you become. And then that confidence causes other people to kind of be sucked into your happiness bubble. And they're asking you, like, how do you do this? And please help me and show me how to do this.
For me, I was surprised by how important finding your community was, because when we left, we thought we would just be traveling around the world. We'd be relatively alone because there's not a lot of weirdos like us who have done this. And then it turns out that there is a big community of people like that, and they've welcomed us in with open arms, and we've done the same with them. And now, as a result, we were initially just the plan was to travel around the world for a year and then come back to North America somewhere and settle down and do something. What that was, we didn't know. But now we have like friends that are in this community that are all around the world. We know people in Germany. We know people in Singapore. We know people in Thailand. And everywhere we are, there's a piece of our family that is now distributed globally because we linked up with this community. And so, yeah, don't underestimate how the importance of community after you retire, because your work friends are going to continue working and they're not going to be as big a part of your life as you think they are.
Yeah, the world continues to get smaller. And when you're in the FI community, it turns out it's actually an amazing gift. Katie, what are your thoughts?
One thing that struck me is that I unexpectedly left my job in September last year. And whilst I knew intellectually that the moment I quit, nothing would actually change in my happiness levels, I was still surprised when I wasn't uncontrollably happy all the time and that actually my day-to-day happiness didn't change very much. And it leaves you a lot of time to think about happiness and what's important to you. It just goes to show that the real focus in this journey should be happiness and not the finances.
Katie, I think you absolutely nailed it. Jim, do you have anything to add on to that?
I've gotten into a habit at Chautauqua on the Friday dinner, which is the last full dinner we have together as a group. And at that point, everybody has gotten to know everybody and these friendships and bonds have formed. And I always take a moment to sort of sit back and look at the dynamic of the group. And I see all of these incredible people smiling, laughing, deeply engaged in various conversations. And I think back to the point Carl was making, that I think the image of the pursuit of financial independence in the general population is that it's a path of deprivation. And I look at Chautauqua when the people go to it, and I'm not seeing deprivation. I'm seeing joy. And financial independence is not a matter of deprivation. It's a matter of expanding your options and expanding your life and expanding the options in your life. Chautauqua is not for everybody. I've done 9 so far, maybe 250 people out of the entire FI community, let alone the entire population, or the entire FI community have come or have been able to come. And there'll be somewhere between 50 and 60 more who get to come this year. So it's not for everybody. And if it's not for you, that's okay. There are a lot of cool things out there. The point is that if you're pursuing FI, you're expanding your opportunities. And if what you've heard and read about Chautauqua makes it one of the opportunities you want to expand into, we'd love to have you. And if we never see you at Chautauqua, but see you somewhere else out on the road, that's pretty cool too. And I look forward to that as well.
So Alan, I thought maybe you could bring this home. Any final takeaways for the audience that's listening to this now and trying to figure out where Chautauqua fits into their plans this year or in the future?
I think you don't need to come to Chautauqua to get Jim's advice. It's on his blog and in his book. You don't need to come to Chautauqua for Millennial Revolution or 1500 or me. It's all out there. I think the people who actually end up coming are the people who have read it all and want more. And you get so much more out of that personal connection, hanging out, learning and implementing. And I think if you just want to come out and hang out and have fun, we'd love to see you. If not, go make it happen on your own. You can do it for free.
Brad, I'm very interested to get your take and see whether or not an episode like this had the same effect on you that it does on me. Like, I'm overwhelmed with kind of the significance of this event for our community and really a deep desire to be a part of it.
Yeah, I agree completely. When I spoke with Jim recently, I described Chautauqua as hallowed ground. And that might seem a bit extreme to people, but that's how I think of this event for the FI community. It's that special. And then to hear our 6 guests talk about community, about friendships, about the pursuit of happiness, it just sounds even more special than I had previously thought. I mean, I've read every single article that's ever come out about Chautauqua, and this last hour really brought it home for me. So I just am incredibly honored to be included, to be going, and to be speaking there. It's going to be amazing.
Oh, the places we will go. Chautauqua has been and will continue to be a centerpiece of this community, and really, really cool to see where this goes into the future as the FI community finally gets organized around it. If you want to find out more information about getting a ticket, just go to choosefi.com/Greece. If there are any tickets available, that is where you can get one. If they are not available or if they are sold out, there is an option to go onto a waiting list so that you would get first notification if any did open up for this year. And then generally, I think it would be good advice just to go and get on the mailing list. That way you get first updates whenever Alan and Katie come up with the next destination for a cool place with cool people. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.